Blood on the River by Alyssa Carbon. Chapter 10, page 75. The people in all places, kindly entreating us, dancing and feasting us with strawberries, mulberries, bread, fish, and other country provisions, whereof we had plenty, for which Captain Newport kindly requited their least favors with bells, pins, needles, beads, or glasses, which so contented them that his liberality made them follow us from place to place and ever kindly respected us. Captain John Smith, a true relation of such occurrences and accidents of note as hath appeared in Virginia. Captain Newport goes off exploring with 8 or 9 gentlemen and 12 sailors. They leave in the shallop the small boat they put together here in Virginia, so they will be able to navigate the narrow riverways. He takes Captain Smith along to be an interpreter with the Indians. They go in search of gold and silver and to find that new passage to the Orient everyone is talking about. They don't take many provisions with them. They say the last time they went exploring, each time they approached a village, the natives invited them in and fed them like kings. In Jamestown, we continue to work. We build a chapel for Reverend Hunt. We hang an old sail between 4 trees as an awning to protect us from sun and rain, and nail a bar between 2 trees for the pulpit. The walls are rails of wood that let the sunlight right in, and logs on the ground are our pews. Reverend Hunt calls us together for prayer, to thank the Almighty for all that we have and to ask for protection. It still has not rained, and our wheat fields and gardens are wilting. We have found no freshwater springs nearby, and so we are still dependent on the river for water. Richard, James, and I spend the afternoon bringing buckets of water from the river to dump on the tiny new shoots. When I take a drink, I find it still salty, and I wonder if we are killing the young plants rather than saving them. Richard and James keep to themselves, talking to each other, but not to me. I think about what Reverend Hunt said about being kinder to James. But if they treat me as if I am not there, how can I be nicer? Maybe not yelling at them, not calling them names, not hitting them, maybe that is enough. After supper, there is evening prayer in the new chapel. Reverend Hunt says we will have common prayer every morning and evening from now on, and 2 sermons on Sunday. Page 77. By dusk I am so tired, I can hardly wait to get to bed. It is cloudy, there will be no moon tonight. I go off into the woods to relieve myself. I hear a rustling nearby and squint in the half-light, but see nothing. Was it a deer? Maybe just a squirrel or a rabbit. As I walk back to camp, I hear the sound again and whip around. This time I see a form, something dark, slip behind a tree. The hair on the back of my neck bristles. But maybe it is just one of the other men, relieving himself as well. Who's there? I call. No answer. I take a few steps toward the tree where the dark form slipped away. Wingapoo, I call out. Silence. It must have been a deer, I think. I go back to our camp. I creep into our tent and flop into our bed. It is the same bed that the 3 of us shared on the ship, and by now the straw is rotting. Henry and Abram's bed is crammed into our small tent as well, for the 2 of them are still playing cards with the sailors. Richard is already asleep, dead to the world, snoring softly. James stirs, and I know he is still awake. I think about saying goodnight to him in an effort to be more kind, but I am so tired. I just close my eyes and am almost instantly asleep. It drags me up out of a dream, a shriek like a demon's cry. At first I think I am still dreaming, but there is another, page 78, piercing cry, then another, and soon the forest is ringing with the noise as if all the demons in hell have entered our camp. I bolt upright. I can barely see more than shadows. An arrow pierces our tent and lodges in the ground next to me. James is sitting up. Richard lies there sprawled. Has he already been shot? Get under the mattress, both of you, I shout. Are they still enough afraid of me to obey? I'm going to the ships, James cries. He crawls toward the tent flap. No, I yelled. I lunge after him, grab his ankle, yank him back. Get under the mattress, now, I order him. Richard groans. He's either waking up or dying. James wriggles out of my grasp, heads toward the tent opening. I grab him, harder this time. He turns and sinks his teeth into the flesh of my arm. Yow! I snatch my hand back. In that split second, James is out of the tent. And another arrow twangs past my ear. Richard is sitting up now, rubbing his eyes. I grasp the edge of our mattress, dump Richard onto the ground, and then pull the mattress on top of both of us. I can hear my own breathing and the blood pumping in my ears. Will the mattress protect us? I remember the discussion. An arrow will fly right through a mattress, you idiot. No, it won't. Page 79. Yes, it will. Won't. Will. The argument rages in my own head. I expect any moment to feel the sharp pain of an arrow through my chest. All around us I hear footsteps, shouting, that god-awful shrieking. the twang of arrows being shot, men crying out in pain. Finally, I hear a musket fire. Kill them, I think. But the twanging of arrows continues. I feel the impact as an arrow hits our mattress. I feel no pain. Richard, are you hit? I shout. Silence. Then after a moment, I don't think so. I want to yell at him that this is a stupid answer. He's either in pain or he is not. But if I'm ever going to be nicer to James and Richard, now is the time. Do you hurt anywhere, I ask? He moves as if testing his body. No, he says. Suddenly there is a great boom. Someone has boarded one of the ships and is shooting the cannons. I hear a crackling and a crash, the cannonball hitting a tree. Then I hear the pounding of bare feet in retreat. Soon all is quiet. If someone made it to the ship safely, James could be there as well, I think. I feel sweaty and clammy under the mattress. I think we can come out now, I say to Richard. We both heave the mattress off of us. Page 80. Outside, men come around with torches, calling out, "Who is wounded? Who is shot?" We crawl out of the tent and find Abram lying there, an arrow in his side. "I was just coming to bed," he says in a weak voice. "I guess I didn't quite make it." "Here," I call out, "a man is wounded here." Two men come and lift Abram. He groans. "We'll get you to the doctor," they say. "James, he went to the ships," I tell Richard. We make our way down toward the riverbank,